Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Crush Video, Post-Argument Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On October 6, 2009, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in United States v. Stevens. The issue in this case is whether 18 U.S.C. 48, which criminalizes the creation for sale of depictions of animal cruelty, is facially invalid under the Free Speech Clause of the First Amendment. To discuss the case, we have Winston and Strawn litigation associate Jacob R. Loschen. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Loschen.
The Supreme Court this week heard oral argument in the case of United States v. Stevens, a potentially important First Amendment case about the prohibitions on visual depictions of animal cruelty. The story of this case unfolded in three acts. The first act begins in 1999. That was when Congress became concerned with something called crush videos. Crush videos are videos designed to appeal to a rather unique sexual fetish, wherein a woman, often in high heel shoes, crushes small animals to death with her feet. Congress, like many of us, found these videos quite disturbing and amassed a large record documenting a robust commercial market for these videos on the internet. If Congress had simply passed a law outlawing crush videos, we would not be talking about this case today. But the law Congress drafted went quite a bit further. It made it a federal felony to, quote, knowingly create, sell, or possess a depiction of animal cruelty. And it defined animal cruelty as anything where a living animal is, quote, maimed, mutilated, tortured, wounded, or killed. To that broad prohibition, Congress also added two exceptions. First, the depicted conduct had to be illegal under the law of the state in which it was created or under the law of the state in which it was possessed or sold. Second, exempted from the prohibition are depictions that have, quote, serious religious, political, scientific, educational, journalistic, historical, or artistic value. Since Congress enacted the statute in 1999, there have been no prosecutions involving crush videos. But fast forward to 2004, which begins the second act of this story. That was when the government indicted Robert Stevens, not for selling crush videos, but for producing and selling documentaries containing footage of dogfighting. Stevens was a pit bull enthusiast who claimed to be personally opposed to dogfighting. He had not taken the dogfighting footage himself, and dogfighting had been legal at the time and place the footage was filmed, some of which had been filmed in Japan. But because it was illegal in Virginia, where Stevens sold his video, it fell within the statute. Stevens was ultimately convicted and sentenced to over 3 years in prison, a sentence for depicting dogfighting almost twice as long as Michael Vick's sentence for engaging in it. Stevens' case eventually made its way to the Supreme Court, and the court granted certiorari to decide whether the statute criminalizing depictions of animal cruelty violates the First Amendment. In defending the statute, the government argued that the prohibited depictions of animal cruelty were unprotected speech, falling outside the scope of the First Amendment. One of the first forks in the winding road of First Amendment jurisprudence is the question of whether the content of the speech is protected or unprotected. If it's protected, it must pass the demanding test of strict scrutiny. But if it's unprotected, the government can suppress it with a much freer hand. Relying on a 1942 case called Chaplinsky v. New Hampshire, the government argued that speech is unprotected, in the words of Chaplinsky, if, quote, any benefit that may be derived from the speech is clearly outweighed by the social interest in order and morality. Applying that balancing test here, the government argued that depictions of animal cruelty should be treated as unprotected speech because they are of, quote, low value, and because the government has a strong interest in preventing acts of animal cruelty. I think it's fair to characterize the government's argument here as ambitious. The Supreme Court has not recognized a new category of unprotected speech in decades. The traditional categories of unprotected speech have been incitement, fighting words, defamation, and obscenity. All of those categories have long historical pedigrees. So one can read Chaplinsky's balancing test in two ways, either as an explanation for why we've inherited a few traditional categories of unprotected speech, or as an invitation, a test to apply in discovering new categories. In a brief my firm filed on behalf of the Cato Institute, we argued that the latter approach, treating Chaplinsky as an invitation, would be a radical move. In the decades since Chaplinsky, the court has not taken up the invitation to create new categories and has generally narrowed the existing ones, with one possible exception for child pornography, which I'll discuss in a moment. Treating Chaplinsky as an invitation could also effectively replace strict scrutiny with a less demanding balancing test, simply weighing the value of the speech against the government's interests. And if the balancing test is all you need to satisfy to avoid strict scrutiny starts to look much less strict. This brings us to the third act of the story, the oral argument this week. I think the most notable thing about the argument was the government's shift in emphasis. Gone was the ambitious focus on Chaplinsky's balancing test and the creation of new categories of unprotected speech. Instead, the government emphasized two more modest arguments. First, it highlighted just how narrow the statute arguably is. The government noted it applied only to depictions of actual animal cruelty involving real animals. And the government pointed to the statute's broad exception for depictions that have, quote, serious religious, political, scientific, educational, journalistic, historical, or artistic value. But the vagueness of that exception soon led to a stream of colorful hypotheticals from the court. Would the statute criminalize hunting videos? How could the statute criminalize dogfighting videos without also criminalizing videos by organizations like PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, who show images of animal cruelty to raise awareness? What about depictions of bullfighting? What if they're Spanish depictions? Does that make them educational or historical? And so on. The government's response was to argue that all of the hypotheticals could be subject to as-applied challenges, and that they didn't warrant invalidating the statute on its face. But most of the justices seemed unpersuaded that the statute could be construed narrowly or saved from substantial overbreath. As Justice Breyer put it, quote, why not do a simpler thing? Rather than let the public guess as to what these words mean, ask Congress to write a statute that actually aims at those frightful things that it was trying to prohibit. The government's second point of emphasis in oral argument, again more modest than its original approach, was its focus on United States v. Ferber. Indeed, when asked by Chief Justice Roberts for a one-sentence test to determine which categories of speech are unprotected, the government invoked Ferber, not Chaplinsky. In Ferber, the court upheld prohibition on images of child pornography depicting actual children. The government read Ferber for the proposition that Congress can regulate a depiction of conduct as a means of rooting out the conduct itself. With child pornography, it was an effort to prevent the actual exploitation of actual children. And here, the government argued, the same was true of animal cruelty. In both cases, the government suggested that the prohibitions on speech were not targeting the contents of the depiction, but only the underlying acts. Multiple justices were skeptical, however. Aside from the obvious differences between child exploitation and animal cruelty, the statute's exceptions for religious, political, scientific, and other values obviously content-based. And at least Justice Scalia seemed inclined to treat Ferber and child pornography not as creating some new rule, but simply as an obscenity case falling into a familiar category. As for the other sided argument, Justice Alito seemed the most skeptical of Stevens' arguments. He suggested that the statute in the real world may have dried up the market for crush videos without actually threatening videos about hunting and the like. And Alito also had a hypothetical of his own. If there were a TV channel devoted to showing images of human sacrifice, could Congress ban the human sacrifice channel in an effort to stop human sacrifice? So what will the fourth act of this story bring? It's always perilous to try to predict an outcome. But based on the tenor of oral argument, I think the court is likely to unanimously or near unanimously, perhaps with Alito's dissent, invalidate the statute. The broader First Amendment implications of the ruling, however, will depend very much on how it's written. So watch for multiple concurrences and perhaps a split on the court between justices unwilling to expand the scope of unprotected speech and justices willing to at least extend the rationale of Ferber. Also watch for a split between those who think a statute prohibiting depictions of animal cruelty is irredeemable and those who think it could be reenacted with better drafting.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.